repeal, replace, rethink, maybe? From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishor, in for David Brancaccio. In a dramatic late-night meeting over the GOP's plan to replace Obamacare, lawmakers announced nothing. They scurried away from reporters without any announcement because they did not reach a deal on their health care bill that would repeal and replace Obamacare. The vote on that bill is expected tonight. Opposition has come from a lot of different corners, some conservatives who are urging a do-over. The AARP opposes the new plan, and so do hospital executives. From our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein looks at why hospitals are so concerned.
A heavyset man sits in a gurney pushed to the side of a hallway here in the ER Jefferson Health in Philadelphia. It's not even 9 o'clock, and already beds are filling up. CEO Dr. Stephen Klasko guides me to a fancy-looking IV pump. It can replace nearly half of someone's blood after they got shot, stabbed, or hurt in a car accident.
In the old days, we would lose patients because we weren't able to just get that volume in quickly enough. The difference between getting in 3 minutes or 7 minutes could be life and death.
The point, says Klasko, is that it takes money to buy powerful equipment. The Obamacare repeal bill would move about 3% of Jefferson's patients from insured to uninsured. 3% doesn't sound like much, but it could cut annual revenue by $50 to $100 million.
There are consequences to these kinds of policies.
Rick Pollack heads the American Hospital Association. They've launched a media campaign against the bill and brought dozens of hospital leaders to lobby members of Congress. A main message: hospitals are businesses and may have to take drastic steps.
They could be certain services being shut down. They could be staff reductions. They could be hospital closures.
Hospitals don't have piles of money sitting around.
That's UCLA law professor Jill Horwitz. Horwitz says the typical U.S. hospital already has operating margins in the red. She says if this legislation passes, hospitals may look to conduct more unnecessary tests and procedures on people with insurance as a way to gin up revenue.
It's important not to say that there are rapacious doctors in horrible hospitals and they're trying to squeeze every last dollar out of you. But it would be silly to think that hospitals and doctors don't respond to those incentives. They have to.
Horwitz says so far the debate has focused on people losing insurance and folks on Medicaid. The truth, she says, is that if hospitals take it on the chin, everybody is going to feel it in some way. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.1%. Dow futures are down 7 points, about even. NASDAQ futures are about even. S&P futures are up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.42%. Skilled workers from abroad who want to work in the U.S. for companies that want to have them have to apply for what's known as an H-1B visa. The system for getting those visas is complicated, stressful, and lottery-based. It also has a price tag up to $4,000, and it's employers who have to pay. As Sally Herships reports, when it comes to H-1Bs, the business owners have plenty to grumble about.
There's really no polite way to say this. When it comes to the H-1B system, the tech industry is pissed off. It says H-1Bs prevent it from hiring the employees it needs. Just listen to Amal Sarva. He's based in New York. He's helped to found multiple startups, like a smartphone company called Peak and Virgin Mobile USA.
You know, the fantasy of the H-1B opposition is that, oh yeah, sure, we'll just hire more out-of-work coal miners and bring them to New York, and it's not possible.
There are a lot of disagreements surrounding H-1Bs. Critics say jobs that should go to Americans are given away to cheap foreign labor. But Sarva says it's not that simple. This morning, we're visiting Knotel, another one of his companies. It provides customizable co-working space in New York. On the fifth floor, we stop by the desk of Kabir Chopra. He's Canadian, but originally from India. He's a Knotel client and CEO of his own company, which makes customizable sofas. Do you have any members of your staff who are on H-1Bs?
No, just me. Everyone else is American.
But Sarva says creating jobs is hard to do when you can't hire the workers you need. Even worse, H-1B rules are complicated. It's so bad that when I call the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services office to clarify the rules, the spokesperson there gets something wrong. She says when workers lose their visas, they have 10 days to leave the country, when really it's 60. Sarva says the problem isn't hiring skilled foreign workers.
Far more real is if you can't get visas, you just open an office overseas.
Danielle Ayobdia studies H-1Bs at Northwestern. He says another problem with the current system is it favors large companies. Remember, H-1Bs are based on a lottery, and you have to pay to enter. So if you need 100 workers with a special skill, a big company can afford to submit 3 times that many applications. Odds are it'll win the spots it needs. But a small company, which really needs 1 or 2 special workers, is likely out of luck. Just ask Ben Weber.
We didn't win the lottery. I mean, literally, did not win the lottery.
Weber is co-founder of Humanize, a small tech startup in Boston that analyzes productivity. And he is frustrated.
Our people are incredibly specialized and incredibly skilled. I can literally tell you, they create orders of magnitude more jobs than us hiring an entry-level employee. I mean, we will hire people to work for them.
If they can stay. Weber says if his workers don't get visas next time, he started pricing office space in Japan and Canada. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And one reminder that if you're looking for investment opportunities, you don't have to find the next Google or Apple or Facebook. Shares in humble pizza company Domino's have risen more than 2,000% in the past 6 years. Maybe it has something to do with the new pizza recipe they started using in 2009. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.